And we're back.
Guess who's back? Back again. We are back. The Finnish football show is back. And yes, thanks, Huck. I did remember to press record. So thanks, everyone, for joining us for another episode of the Finnish football show. It's me, Mark Wiltshire from Explore Finland. There's Mark at the bottom there from FC Suomi.
Hello.
But no Rich. We don't have Rich this week. We have Keke Mulleri from the Stand fanzine and also his own WordPress blog, which we'll drop some plugs in later. And then at the bottom, Henry Hakamaki, also there as Hup1995. So those that are watching, there aren't many of you because we've had a few technical problems tonight, but you can see how you can contact all of us on Twitter afterwards. We asked these guys to step in. Rich, in the last month or so, his life has gone upwards and he's had a baby, joined his family. My family life has kind of gone in the other direction. So we took a month off to let everything start to settle down. But now we're back and I'm happy to be back here doing this show. And I'm pleased these guys could bail us out a little bit. So this is episode 6, where we are going to talk about the recent upturns for Hukkajat. And as Huck said in a tweet or on the Facebook group, where did that performance come from? So we'll discuss that. And we want your input. There aren't as many live viewers as we normally have, which is a shame. But if you do manage to join us, the message bar on the right-hand side of the screen is the place to leave any comments or questions. And if you type /Q before your question, then it will pop it up on the other side of the screen, and we'll have all the questions in one place. We probably won't be off the record this week because we've got about 45 minutes until the next Euro 2016 game starts. So we're squeezing this one in. But the podcast that will be coming in a few days when we get it edited. Rich isn't here. I thought of a nice way where we could keep him here in spirit. And the reminders that I've said to Rich at the beginning of every show apply to you new guys as well, which is no F-bombs and no noisy biscuits, but just so that we keep Rich in our mind, I think that the packet of digestives can just sit there
in the corner
of my screen. So, Rich, when you watch this or when you listen to this, we love you, we miss you, we want you back.
The thing is, I mean, it's a secret signal between the two of us. So if I have a rant that goes on past like a minute and a half, he starts to, you know, crackle the biscuit packets to rein me back in case I get too animated. So
the rant last time was quite special.
It was quite the rant for sure.
I love Tim Vaaranen, by the way. Just not about him, just about the thing.
But we're not going to go into that subject again. We'll talk about the recent form of Hukkajat. We'll also look at the first third of the Veikkausliiga season. And first, as we often do, let's talk about some news. And Mark, what news have you come up with today that we didn't previously plan to talk about?
It's not news, so to speak. But the thing that struck me today is, and it's like 20 minutes old. So, you know. For those, this is especially for those 3 weeks later in the podcast.
Breaking news today.
But Hungary just beat Austria 2-0 in their opening game for Euro 2016. And they finished third, hit the playoffs, got themselves a nice group. They were the second best team for about 60 minutes. Defended well, deep, played very strong, played quite smart football. Even though it wasn't particularly pretty because there was a couple of horrendous challenges that they threw in. Got a goal with the only move of the game that they had that was of any real quality. And then about 10 minutes later, Austria had one of their blokes sent off and a goal disallowed straight afterwards. And after that, Hungary just played smart, played counter-attacking football, down the flanks, stretched the play. And you just think, that's the... Like, I've been following Finnish football so long. that's the dream. Like that's the best that they've literally taken exactly everything that I want for Finnish football, and they've made it happen right in my face, right after this, like after the group that we had that we should have got out of. So it's first of all, to any hungry fans, it's been God knows how long, 20 years or so since they've had actually 30 or 40 years since they've had a decent squad. So any hungry fan, congratulations, and I hope you enjoy it. But for any Finnish football fans, that's how easy it is. If you get it right, that's how easy it is. So it's not really news, but I did want to just have a shout out to Hungary and all the guys, because it's sometimes you get so sort of stuck thinking football's just, it's easy. And it seems like Hungary have figured that out.
Keke, you came up with something interesting yesterday when we talked about these news things, which was this story about Kosovo. And it does have,
yes,
it does also have a Finnish football aspect to it.
It does have implications for the Finnish national team because, as we know, Gibraltar and Kosovo have been now recognised as FIFA members. They've been admitted to FIFA. And so they're now allowed to compete in the 2018, if anybody still wants to go to Russia, in the 2018 World Cup qualifiers. So Kosovo have found themselves parachuted into Group I, along with ourselves, Finland, Iceland, Croatia, Ukraine and Turkey. A UEFA task force was set up to find exactly which group Kosovo would go into, because basically they wanted them to avoid Bosnia-Herzegovina for, obvious reasons.
Politics.
And indeed. So they've ended up in our group. I was a little bit miffed by the news at first, because obviously myself and quite a few others have already booked travel to away games that are already sort of had their dates set, but we've been assured that these Kosovo games won't have any impact on the fixtures already planned. But yeah, the interesting aspect is that FIFA have stated that anyone of Kosovan birth or Kosovan descent, or who's moved away from Kosovo, I guess you could say, and has already played for an A-grade game for a national side of any adopted country, can now choose to revert back and play for Kosovo. So,
there's various, indeed.
Those are the ones that spring to mind first of all. Obviously, our old friend Shefki is a bit old now, but if he fancied turn out for Kosovo, he's more than welcome. So that's the news story from myself.
And there's quite a lot of those kind of Kosovan diaspora players. I can't pull one into my head straight away, but there are some Kosovan descendants playing across many different European countries.
Yep. So that'd be they're all over the place. I mean, you've got a guy who used to be at West Ham and now at Watford, Valon Berami. He plays for Switzerland.
Okay.
So he's another one. If he chooses, he could disappear and play for Kosovo. So yeah, they're literally littered all over Europe, you know. So you never know. They could have quite a decent team if they all decide to go back. But you know, it's a personal decision, I guess.
Well, Zerdan Shaqiri for Switzerland also would be eligible to play for Kosovo. You've got players like that all over Europe. Switzerland seems to have quite a few of them, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, either Albanians or Kosovans.
Right.
Just one note as well on Kosovo. They 2 weeks ago, they rocked up against the Faroe Islands and won 2-0. So that's the kind of, like, they beat the Faroe Islands, who we did, in fairness, struggle against at home in the Olympiastadion last year. They went and beat them 2-0.
Made hard work of it away as well, to be fair.
Yeah, and we did. Yeah, that's right, exactly. That was the 3-1, the opening game, wasn't it? When it was
Alexander's
own goal. God, horrible day. and yet the best win. No, but yeah, so they're not like these Kosovo have been playing like unrecognized friendlies for a long time, for 4 or 5 years, and the boys that they've got there, even like without the additions of the likes of potentials like Shaqiri, they're still a pretty, I mean, they're a minnow, but they're a minnow you've got to watch out for.
Yeah.
What was your comment, Mark, about the Germany fixture?
Yeah, so that came, the Balolito announced that like at the same time or just after the Kosovo like rearrangement, that August 31st, we're going to go, Hukert go to Mönchengladbach to play Germany for a friendly. And that'll mean that we've played by then probably the best team in the world, but like the sort of second and fourth, and I think Italy were the 12th best team in the world. So we've hit some real more heavy hitters in the last like year than we've hit since we were in the group of France and Spain. Hmm. So some really big friendlies. And I mean, the messaging that they say always is that, you know, you're going to learn from the best. And I hope they take it as that, but I don't know. I'm not sure if it's the best like training. The practice match for Kosovo is Germany. So I don't know. I don't know if we'll rock up at Kosovo with like 8 defenders on the line.
Yeah. But you know, you mentioned that, Mark, and I don't know if it's too early to get on our discussions about the recent friendlies, but you know, these Italy have shown themselves yesterday that they're no mugs, despite all the pundits saying, oh, it's the worst team for years, they're not going to go anywhere, blah, blah, blah. Belgium, on the other hand, ranked, I don't know, is it number one second in the world? And you know, and Finland obviously got that cracking draw against Belgium. Mm. Should have won, as Lukaku was offside. But there you go.
He was a mile offside. It wasn't just a bit, but yeah. Sorry.
Well, no, that's probably a good time to segue over. So,
hang on. Hook hasn't had his.
I was just going to bring up one thing. I was having a conversation with Barbarian on Twitter about all of the friendlies that we've had recently.
Legend.
We being Hukajat. But since 2012, the Hukajat have played 3 home friendlies, 10 neutral friendlies, and 15 away friendlies. Now, obviously, against a team like Germany, we're going to be playing those games away, but we've also played away friendlies against Norway, Slovakia, Hungary, Wales, Luxembourg, Israel, Cyprus. It's a list that Barbarian got together for me when I was asking him about it. But are we to not expect to ever have home friendlies again?
It's that's a brilliant point. I mean, even the Kosovo game, when it's arranged, that's in Turku. So they are like, they announced that Tampere would be the new home while the Olympic Stadium is under development here. Mm-hmm. And our first kind of official home friendly away from the Olympic Stadium in a competitive match, it's in Turku, not in Tampere, even though that's where they picked. And it's like, but it's a fabulous point, because I'm bloody sick of not having like friendlies that you can commute to. You know what I mean?
There's also quite a nice new stadium been built just down the road from me, but I'm sure we'll get onto that either today or in another show. 5,800 capacity. It looks lovely. It's a friend of mine said to me the other day, you're so excited about this new stadium, it's almost like a church for you. And I thought, that's my religion. That's where I go. That's where I go to pray.
It is.
The stadium looks brilliant.
It really does. And I am excited. The first game is on Saturday. It sold out yesterday. The final few tickets sold out yesterday. And I'm looking forward to going and making some noise. And it's a proper stadium, William, where you walk up the steps and then you see the green and then you walk down to your seats. Or actually at the end, we have some of these very trendy standing seated areas where the seats can fold away. Perfect. And you can stand up. But yeah, it's going to be good. It was, I guess, a little poignant last Thursday for the final game at Keskuskenta, but you know, it's not somewhere I'm going to miss. Let's go on to those international games. Belgium versus Finland and then Italy versus Finland. And I think I didn't see much of either of these games, so I'm throwing it over to you guys, because especially you, Keke, went to the Italy game, so I'm sure you've got lots to tell us about that. But first of all, was the Belgium game and a 1-1 draw, which we just touched on a little bit there. But Mark, what went right? We normally ask what went wrong, so let's be positive. What went right? How did it go?
So we generally managed to exploit Belgium and the hype that they have. It's one of those things that I need to watch a couple of games to see whether it's kind of luck or design, because at the minute, since we got thumped by Poland, we've played this sort of 5-3-2. And it seems like he's going to stick with that for the way forward. And it could just be that was the right system against a Belgium side that weren't at 100%. But there was tons and tons of positives to take out from the game. So Jukka Raitala was the first one down that left flank. It's been maybe 4 or 5 years since he's played left back regularly for Finland, because he's been a bit of a journeyman. He's moved to Heerenveen and didn't work out. He's moved to Denmark, where he was at Vestsjælland, and then AAB didn't really get any traction there. He didn't really get any prolonged game time or any successful prolonged game time. So he's been struggling for the last 4 or 5 years. But then against Belgium, he was up and down the wing all night. He was defensively very well positioned. He wasn't always kind of strong in the tackle, and he wasn't always threatening to the wingers, but he was very great, very good on the breakaway. He was quick, and he was crucial for Finland's opening goal when Tim Sparv sort of drew out the defense, drew out the center backs towards him, and then slipped in Raitala with a lovely ball, who smashed it across the box for Kappe to hit. So Jukka Raitala was our number one, good point. Kasper Hamalainen scoring a goal because we're not a team that creates a lot of chances. So getting on the score sheet is a hell of a positive, particularly against that kind of defense. And the back three in particular for me as well, Halstead. I was really worried about Halstead because he hadn't played any competitive football for about 7 months, and he seemed to look relatively okay. They played very deep and they played tight together, and there was three big strong guys. For some reason, Belgium continuously kind of punted the ball into the box, and they sent high balls and high crosses in, which was perfect for Arayuri, Toivio and Halstead. When they had it on the floor, and they were pinging it around a bit, they caused us a lot of problems. And so it was a bit of a surprise that I don't know if they were specifically working on something or if they were just tactically naive. I mean, Belgium is one of those teams that everybody always... They're second in the FIFA rankings in a way by default, based on the kind of inconsistency of other teams. So somebody like Germany would wipe the floor with Belgium, but they lost a couple of times to Poland, and they had some dodgy results, I think, against, was it the Republic of Ireland in qualification, and that cost them in the points. Belgium walked their qualification group. But we managed to exploit in behind the flanks that aren't really fullbacks for Belgium. We got into spaces that really hurt them, and for the only game that I've seen maybe in the last three or four years, Roman Yaremenko stuck to his position. And I mean, it might not be the best position for him, but he didn't come deep and look for the ball. He generally stayed up in support of Hamalainen, which gave the Belgian defense something else to think about when he was up top. His movement was very... He didn't get a lot of the ball, but his movement was very good, and it really helped create space for other players. So it was... I mean, there was a lot of positives to take away from it, and. As Keke said, the Belgian goal, it was... But part of me, I was tearing my hair out again because it was the 89th minute. And again, in the 89th minute, we had managed to get sort of suckered one more time. But he's right. I mean, Lukaku was offside. And he was offside by a good leg and shoulder and shin and half his body. So, and I mean, as well, so the sort of shot cross came in and it deflected off Toivio's toe, I think. And Hradecki did everything right to get his hand in the ball and it could have gone from that save, that fantastic save, it could have landed anywhere, and it landed square on Lukaku's chest, who had a yard advantage because he was offside. So it was like in the goal that we conceded, there was four or five things that were wrong that we could do nothing about, that were down to like the referee or blind luck or bad fate. And I mean, we do seem to constantly fall foul of those things, but you can't, like when you walked off the pitch, when they walked off the pitch as a fan, you could be nothing but happy and proud because they were committed. They were strong. They were clever, kept the ball very well, dealt with the high pressure a lot. I mean, that's the sort of pragmatic football that you're probably going to need to get out of the group that we're in for the World Cup qualifiers.
Adding a little bit of Hungary in there as well, just for good measure.
A little bit of Hungary wouldn't hurt. I mean, it's just, I mean, the downside is, I mean, Poggianpaolo who got injured? No, he got injured before the Italy game. That was later. But in attack, we have to take. I think we made about two or three chances against Belgium, and we only took one of them. And the sort of, it's not a downside, but the reality of playing 5-3-2 the way that we do with Roman Yarmolenko as one of the strikers means that whenever you get a chance, you've got to score. You've got to put it away. And there was a couple of headers from corners that we could have done better with, and there was a couple of half chances where you thought, you know, a better shot, a better execution, and we'd be that kind of hungry team that can nick a win against somebody like Belgium.
Maybe if we could get Lucas to put a pair of tracksuit bottoms on as well, like Gabor Kiraly, if we really wanted to go for the hungry theme. But yeah, I mean, I was following the Belgian game on Twitter, so it was a bit difficult to follow, you know, just reading what was happening. And yeah, I'll just echo Mark's thoughts about that 89th minute equaliser. He's just like, oh, so close. It would have been, you know, I mean, I'm sure the guys took confidence from it. I'm absolutely positive of that. But, you know, to imagine coming away from there with a win, they would have just been absolutely flying on their way to the next game in Italy, you know. So,
you know, I mean, it's small things like that might have a small, like a little difference. And I noticed when we get to the Italy game that Roman Yarmolenko again started to drop back looking for the ball when he got frustrated. And you think if we walked away from that with a 1-0 win, Roman Yarmolenko might have been a bit more, I don't know, you know, a bit more hungry to stay in his position to keep his discipline, because that's really what it's all about. I mean, I don't know Roman Yarmolenko, and I can't cast aspersions on him or his character, but he's the best player in the squad. And he'll probably have walked away from that 1-1 thinking, we didn't win, and we didn't win because I didn't get enough of the ball. You know what I mean? And
that's just go looking for it.
That's just what dressing rooms are like. That's just what the best player in the team always knows best. You know what I mean? There's not much any manager can do about that, unfortunately. No. So if we'd have kept,
I mean, you're right about the back. What do you want to call them? 3, 4, 5? I don't know, but yeah, depending on which way you look at the formation. But again, in Italy, I mean, the guy who stood out for me at the back was Paulus Arriuri. I mean, he was mopping up everything, you know. It was coming in the air, and he was, you know, he wasn't just getting rid of it. He was bringing it down, controlling it, trying to bring it out, you know. But he was, like, in the centre of defence, he was absolutely immense. He was everywhere, you know. And
he's an absolute beast. Yeah, I mean, he's just one of the guys. He's just huge, and he dominates. Not just physically, just his presence-wise. You know what I mean? Like when he barks and shouts, Toivio and Halsti. So that's two players that have got, you know, 300-400 professional games on him, still listening to him and taking direction and do it like following the orders to keep everything tight and disciplined. And his presence is fantastic. I've got a good feeling that Arriuri will move on from Botnan this year. I mean, there's talk of him going to Warsaw with Hammerleinen, which would be I mean, he'd have to buy a couple of new cars after the petrol bombs go off. But yeah. but I think he's one of those. He's one of those players where you could put him in. I put him in the same bracket as Spav, where you could put him in a lower end Premier League team. You could put him in a Bundesliga team. You could put him in a Italian defense, again, sort of like in the lower end. And yeah. he generally survived because he's got enough of the all-round game.
Right. He's a big, strong defender, but he's still good with the ball at his feet. For a guy his size, he's really strong with the ball at his feet. He's not afraid to take it up and play it on to that's other it. People.
He can play it from the back,
with the ball.
Know? Yeah, that's it.
Exactly. You know, he's not your typical tree where he just gets the ball and clears it. He actually can do something with it and help build the attack from the back.
That's it. You know, and if we can not panic when the ball comes in, and not just, you know, obviously when you're a small team like us, safety first, that comes into it. But if he's prepared to control the ball and bring it down and try and create something from the back, you know, if he wants to play that way, I think we should utilise that. You know, the other positive that we have to take from those games is Lucas as well in goal. You know, he just seems to be growing and growing and growing and getting better and better. These the performances he's put in the Bundesliga has built his confidence, and you know what they say, just because a goalkeeper lets one in or you know, Italy have ended up doing us 2-0, one from the penalty spot, but that guy still had an absolutely immense game, you know, despite you know, not being able to keep a clean sheet. But he's come away from there. He can hold his head up high. He's had a fantastic couple of games.
Well, even in the Bundesliga, where he had some games where he would make a couple of just... He's a great goalkeeper, but he's just prone to some really... How do you make that kind of errors? But even in those games where he would make a big error or two, he would still play with confidence for the rest of the game. So he's one of those players. He has a really short memory. And
Like
honestly, some of those errors he made, I don't know how he made them. He came back from it and played at a world-class level after that.
But the thing is, he's still 26. It's young for a keeper, and moving up to the Bundesliga is like... I mean, he's in another level. You know what I mean? He's going to make mistakes because he's under pressure from far quicker players, far more athletic players, far more agile players, players with far more experience. So he's going to get caught out a couple of times, but he's going to play for another 10 years. You know what I mean? It looks like he's going to play for another 10 years.
Yeah.
The mistakes he's made. I mean, while he made mistakes at Frankfurt, he kept them in the league. Like,
oh yeah,
no,
yeah, sure.
Absolutely no shadow of a doubt about it. He kept them in that league, particularly in the last playoff games. So he's all in all, he's a brilliant keeper who's going places.
We've moved away a little bit from talking about these two games particularly, and I'm really keen to hear about Keke's trip to Italy.
Yeah,
to follow Hooker.
So,
is that all you can remember?
We arrived in Verona on Saturday. Most of the other Finnish supporters arrived on Saturday as well. Everyone was keen to make a weekend of it. What would the game be on Monday? You know, so it was. Yeah, it made sense to get there on Saturday and see what Verona had to offer. Some of the guys had travelled across from Belgium, down from Belgium on the train, and a few others had flown into either Milan or Verona. So we all managed to sort of meet up on Saturday night. I don't know if you guys are aware, but it was handy that the game was in Verona because... even before Perpa turned up at Chievo, there was a little bit of a Chievo-Finland friendship supporter thing going on. So Yeah, Saturday evening, we found ourselves out in Chievo, the suburb of Verona, with some colourful Chievo supporters, and who was intent on showing us a good time. So we had a good few drinks out there. It was like a Chievo fans owned supporter club type bar thing. So a few drinks with them, and it was good fun. I mean, poor old Chievo there, despite being the senior football team in Verona at the moment, their share of supporters in the city is sort of like 5% to 95% Hellas. So they've got a love for an underdog. Maybe that's why we sort of suit each other. I don't know. But that was Saturday. Sunday, a few of the guys went over to the Hawke training camp, and some of the younger supporters were met the players, and a few photos, especially with Purpa. He was really, really keen to sort of meet everybody and pose for photos and autographs. And that was quite nice, you know, especially for there was a couple of kids around, so that was pretty good of the guys to sort of stop by and make time for the fans who had made that trip. Day of the game, we headed up to the stadium. It's a beautiful old stadium. It's not had much done to it for a long, long time. It's still covered in the Italian 90s sort of, there's the mascot, Little Chow, the mascot is all over the place.
Really?
Everywhere you look, it says Italian 90, which is sort of the last time that, it's owned by the city of Verona. So it's the last time that anyone spent any money on that ground is to prepare it for the World Cup in 1990. But it's a classic old Italian football stadium. You climb up. It's a big old bowl, big blue running pitch round, running track round the pitch. We made our way up to the Curva Nord, to the away section. There was about 40 or 50 of us, I suppose. Not too much policing. Quite a few stewards in our end, but they were all very, very jovial and friendly. More than willing to let us display our flags and stuff. And we had a bit of a friendly rapport with the Italian fans. They thought we were quite a novelty, you know, the 40 or 50 of us travelling from the frozen north or wherever it was we had come from to support our team. So, yeah, we were a bit of a novelty for them. But they, fair play to the Veronese, they managed to pack out all of the stadium. It was absolutely sold out. It was, they created a pretty decent atmosphere. We managed to throw in a song or two as well and make sure that even though we were less in numbers, they heard that we were there. And even after the penalty went in, we still continued singing. And in no small part to the fact that the bar was located literally just feet away from our away section. So and there was no problem with taking your beer into the ground. I mean, I've drunk in the stadium in Sweden before, but yeah, you know, usually going to football in England, it's a little bit different. So standing in the ground watching the game like that, it was everyone had smiles on their faces. But the experience was generally.
Sorry, Keke, I was going to say, does that mean you can't remember the game?
Pretty much, yeah.
Remembered the best bit.
Yeah, I remember. As I said, I remember Ayayuri playing really well, and I also remember. I remember Pukki running around like a I was going to say headless chicken, but that's probably not fair. It was more like a Labrador, you know, an excited Labrador, really. But I so badly want it to work for Pookie. You know what I mean? I really do. But he's and he really did put a shift in. He tried, but you know, we came away. I think it was with one shot off target in the 90 minutes. But for me, I don't know. It didn't quite. Maybe I was seeing it through the beer goggles, but it didn't quite tell the story. I thought, you know, we had a couple of corners. I thought we the stats should have been a bit heavier for us. But yeah, I was told that it was one shot off target that we managed. So a little bit disappointing in that respect. But I thought the guys could come away from it. You know, it's 2-0, but Italy are not a mug team. They never will be, you know. So yeah, it was a great experience. We came out of the ground, continued our boozing in one of the local bars quite close to the stadium, and we were in there for a little while after the game, and then the atmosphere changed a little bit, and we realised it was maybe time to head back to the city centre. So that's what we did, and I think had a few more beers there.
That is a beautiful match report, Paul. It is fitting of the shambles that is the Finnish football show that our correspondent can't really remember the game.
Well done. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, right there.
I love watching skillful players, but my whole interest in the beautiful game of football is to take in atmosphere and just feel part of. That's why I love going away, you know, just to feel part of something in a strange place, drink some beer, and yeah, maybe have a story to tell. But yeah, the game was fantastic, Mark.
Well done, KK.
We need to move on to the next subject of the Veikkausliiga. But I'm aware that we've ignored our one viewer, Harold, who's the only person who managed to join us, and he's asked a couple of questions. So maybe we can just answer his questions and then move on to the Veikkausliiga. So first, he says, what type of playing style does Finland typically employ against teams of its own skill level rather than, we were talking about, better teams?
The same. Under Bakke. Yeah. I mean, like, so under Bakke, the only team of our own skill level that we've played really is Norway. And we played the same kind of, that's where the 5-3-2 came into existence. And it was terrible.
And Norway looks like he's sticking with it.
For better.
As Finland slides down the rankings, more and more teams are going to be of a higher level than us, and that 3-5-2 will become more and more relevant.
Right. Well, I mean, but we haven't played as poorly recently as we did at when Bakke first came in. I mean, so when he first came in, the Sweden game was bad. The Poland game was dreadful. Yeah. The Norway game was just equally as dreadful. Then out of nowhere, we play Belgium and play really, really well. And, you know, then we play Italy and the attack wasn't working. But, I mean, overall, we didn't play that poorly in the game. I mean, against a team as strong defensively as Italy. And, I mean, they just beat Belgium 2-0 as well. So not much more you could have expected from that game. But yeah, I mean, we haven't been playing poorly recently. It was just the beginning. It was just terrible.
Oh, I mean, so there's a okay. Italy are great. They're a very good team. They're going to be a classy team, kind of from now until the end of football. And that's fine. And Pukki did work hard. He made a lot of runs, but I mean, the hard fact is we didn't create any real chance. Like even the shot that we had off target. That was probably one of Roman Yarmenko's distance shots. So we didn't, at no point in that game did I think, oh, we're going to score. You know what I mean? You know when you get off your seat and then it fades away or somebody blocks it or the guy has a bad shot. We were nowhere near that. So we were good against Italy in a sense, but in another, they took the lead through a penalty in the 30th minute, and Italy's like a game is game management. They're the best, probably the best team in the world at managing out a result. And they went up, they went 1-0 up after about 30 minutes. And after that, we didn't land any punches. We didn't hurt anybody. You know what I mean? We didn't get down the wing. We didn't get in behind them. We didn't shoot from distance. We didn't draw anybody out of position. And we didn't move them around in a way that allowed us to get space to take an advantage, to make a shot. So while we worked hard and were disciplined and defensively we looked solid, Italy had more chances, but they weren't in full gear. The Italy that smashed Belgium 2-0 would have pulled that Finland team apart in seconds. And it's harsh to say because there were so many good points, and we are playing better. The thing is, we are playing better than when we played Norway and Poland. But we played so bad in those games. Yeah. Playing better doesn't get us anywhere near the level that we'll need to be at to get like Turkey, Iceland, Croatia. You know what I mean?
Are we prepared to give Becker a chance, though? You know, are we prepared to? I mean, we've got to, because they're not going to get rid of him, are they? So yeah. We just got to hope and pray that he is settling into the job, and the guys are going to start playing maybe his way, or we're going to get better, you know.
And that 5-3-2, I mean, it could have worked. I mean, if Borjan Palo hadn't pulled up before the game, it would have probably been a bit of a different game, because he's younger and he's stronger than Bukki, and he prefers to shoot far more than Bukki does. He prefers to be a box player, like a target player. So we would have played a kind of different style with the same thing. But the problem is, I mean, he only packed Bukki. For that game, what do we have? We had Bukki and Bauranen as recognised strikers, because Roman Yarmolenko filled in as the second striker, even though he's a midfielder. Robin Lund came on for the second half, even though, again, he's a midfielder. So we finished the game with five midfielders on the pitch and five defenders on the pitch and no striker. And, I mean, that's Italy. And the one of the things that I want to give Bakke a chance, 100%, but he has to pack more strikers, even if there were strikers. Tim Vuorinen was on the bench, and I had the big rant about Tim Vuorinen, okay? Put him on. If you've packed him with you, put him up front. Because Robin Lund went back, got the ball, picked it up, brought it to the final third, and there was nobody else there except Roma, who was kind of trying to make a nice, clever run. But there was nobody in the box. And if there's nobody in the box for a team like us, we're not going to score. Right. Exactly right. So while we are playing better and while we are building from the back, and while I do want to give Hans Bakke a chance, there still needs to be some substantial improvement.
And I'm going to jump in again now before Mark gets himself onto another rant, because it was the Norway game. It was the Norway game that sent him spiraling last time. So let's pull him back from the edge. How about if we move on? We said at the start that we're coming up to the kickoff of another Euro 2016 game, and that is now upon us, and we're only halfway through the show, which is pretty much par for the course. So let's crack on with what have we learned from the first third of the Veikkausliiga season. I don't know if Henry, if you get to see more of the game than me or Keke maybe do, but you came up with a few things to talk about. So where do you want to start, with Mariehamn?
Well, I'm just going to preface this by saying the whole Veikkausliiga season so far has been showing me that you can never really predict the Veikkausliiga. After last year and the shock that was SJK coming out of nowhere, and, well, kind of out of nowhere. They were in second the previous year, but nobody thought they were going to take down HJK last year. But after last year, you kind of had an idea what the season was going to be like. It was going to be kind of a fist fight between HJK and SJK to fight for the title. And, you know, pretty much the consensus was that Kemi and Ilves would be struggling for relegation, trying to escape relegation, rather. And the whole season has just been the opposite. So SEKO at the beginning of the season played as poorly as you could possibly imagine the team that they have on the field could have played. And even when they would get wins, they would still get losses. Mark, you know what I'm talking about.
I'm not so sure that's changed. There may be a slightly different ratio of wins to losses now, but there's still plenty of defeats coming along at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they lost their last fixture 1-0, but the problem's been the same all season. They're not scoring goals.
Yeah, true.
Their defense has actually been relatively solid all season. There was one game against Lahti where they were just slashed on the counterattack over and over and over again. But other than that, they've given up one goal a game. And last year, the way that they were attacking, particularly in the second half of the season, they would overturn one goal deficits in the blink of an eye. This season, they've haven't been scoring at all. You know, almost all of their games, it seems like they're the opposing goalkeeper is keeping a clean sheet. Their team so far this season has 12 goals in 13 games. They're averaging under a goal a game. This is the team that won the league last year. They still have Rupi Riski at striker. They've got all of the strong midfielders that they had last season. Well, for the most part. But one of their strongest things that they had last year going for them is they had Riski and Pelvas playing off each other. And Pelvas left for Falkenberg, and they've got Riski at the top, but they don't have any wingers that can provide an additional outlet or attacking option for him.
No, I think we've seen in the last few games that Kink has been playing more regularly and is starting to do some of that work. And I know
he's been doing much better recently, but in the beginning of the season, he couldn't even work his way into the team.
It's worth mentioning Penningangas, very young, tall player playing kind of left back, left wing back, whatever you want to say. And it's really starting to has been making some progress the last few games down the left. And it struck me the other day that we're still without Richie Dorman. I think he came on for a part of the game on Monday, and also Timo Tarvanainen. They were important players last season that just haven't really featured this year. So,
and Hetemäe.
And Hetemäe, yeah, as well. I'm just thinking of kind of width and more attacking in a more attacking role.
But the point that Hook makes is that Hetemäe allows width because he can
close down the whole center of the field.
Yeah, and it's a little bit similar to Ariori. It's not just his size; it's his presence and his kind of awareness of the game. He blocked him alongside, it was Larkson, I think, last year. We're in the middle. That gave a total unlimited freedom to the wide players to try and support and get forward and get under the attack. And I think SEKO this year, when I watched them play, are trying to do some sort of clever upgrade football. You know what I mean? Like get away from big men in the middle and fast wide players and hitting a target man, a little guy playing off the target man who can finish. I think they're trying to build like this, like a 4-3-3 with short interplay and fullbacks that get up wide and then, you know, that's the way that I think they're trying to change tactics from the winning system that they had last year. And it's a bit, I don't know. I think they'll get there, and I think if Hetemäe comes back kind of regularly, they'll be in a place to play better football. But at the minute, they just don't have that sort of solidity. When teams counterattack against SEKO, they run through them. They make like 30, 40, 50, 60 yards, whether it's a long ball over the top or through the middle, just into play. You can cut through SEKO at the minute, and you just couldn't do that last year.
Yeah, well, and that
the,
was
the Eremenko
experiment. Oh, that's a whole other.
Yeah, but it really held the whole thing back. And so if you think that he left, I don't know, 4 weeks ago, and now the team is starting to
gel.
Maybe gel again.
Well, it's not that he was playing poorly either. He just didn't fit the style that they have. You know, you have to kind of sit him centrally. That way he can pull the strings from there. But he doesn't have the work rate to cover defensively that Loxonen and Hetemäe did.
I understand that he wasn't supposed to be playing as deep as he was. And maybe if he'd been playing that number 10, I thought it would have been beautiful. Stick behind the forward. Let the other young boys do your running and just use your skill. But that's you seem to want to play quarterback.
Well. Yeah, but you know, even then, even where he was hitting decent balls. Some of them were fantastic balls, but they were into the corners and they just don't have depth on the wings. And then they don't have that style of play to take the ball out wide and work it in from the outside. And so even when he's hitting these beautiful passes, there's just nothing that could come from it. They don't have the right players for that style of play.
Yeah. No, that's quite right. Let's move on from the depressing subject to actually.
Right.
Hey, let's talk about my shirt. We normally get very excited about Rich's shirt every week, and
it's beautiful.
I got a new shirt. I'll bless you, Huck, with your
hand
mug
painted
or whatever
by my mother.
Well, this is the new. This is Ashikor's team shirt for this year, but it's a bit special because no sponsor. The team shirt is plastered, but they have a version for the fans with no sponsors, and I think it looks kind of classy. It's much more
nice.
My style. Yeah, I like it.
Dash.
So I splashed. Cheaper than the one with all the logos on. So it was, €50? Which is about standard nowadays, I guess. So
Yeah. You can't go wrong with an Adidas shirt. It's a handsome looking thing.
It is, and it'll have to last a long time. Right, let's move on. Where do you want to go next, Huck?
The two surprising teams.
Go on.
Three surprising teams. So if you look at the top of the table now, which when this comes into podcast form, it won't be the top of the table anymore. But right now you've got HJK and IFK Mariehamn level on points. And the only goal differential is separating them. And then immediately behind that, you've got Ilves and Kemi, and they both have 3 games in hand on both of the teams ahead of them. If they both win all 3 of those games, they'd be in first place, first and second place, respectively. But at the beginning of the season, none of these teams were supposed to be doing anything like this. Ilves and Kemi were widely picked for relegation, and I remember right before the season was starting, we were having a couple arguments about whether IFK Mariehamn would be having some issues fighting against relegation too. So these teams, by all rights, shouldn't be at the top of the table, but all 3 of them are there for relatively the same reasons, and that's extremely solid defense and the ability to pull goals late in games. So almost all of the games that these teams are winning, they're winning 1-0. Or if they, you know, score a goal and give up a goal, they'll score another goal in the 89th minute. I believe in Kemi's last game, they won after having a player sent off, and they scored down a man in the 88th minute. That's just how this whole season's going for them. IFK Mariehamn have only given up, let's see, I had it pulled up here. They've only given up 8 goals this season in 14 games. They've only scored 14 goals in 14 games, but they've only given up 8. And that comes down to their defense is playing fantastic. And Walter Viitala, their goalkeeper, who I have to throw in there, is great for interviews. I've interviewed him several times. Really nice guy. But he has just played out of his mind this season. Yeah, he was actually Veikkausliiga player of the season for April. And you know how hard it is for a goalkeeper to be player of the month for the entire league. But That's just EF Comeryham, Ilves, Cammy. They've all been winning games 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. And so they're finding themselves at the top of the table. I don't know how long they can keep that up for, but I mean, this is kind of reminiscent of Leicester at the end of the Premier League season, pulling out games 1-0 successively, one after another after another. So who knows? Maybe we'll have our own Leicester in the Vakos Liga this season.
And even if it's not as extreme as that, they're giving themselves a very good chance of securing safety well before the end of the season. For sure.
Right now, they're all three of them are up by more than 10 points on the relegation spots. Actually, Ilves and Kemi are about 10 points above the relegation spots, but I mean, a third of the way through the season, 10 points is fairly significant, especially in the Vakos Liga, where you don't ever have teams that are so far below the teams that are right behind them. 10 points is a pretty sizable cushion, which kind of swings me into the next topic, which is HIFCO, which is bottom of the table. They've lost their last six games. They have, I think, only scored one or maybe two goals in those six games. Things have been going really bad for HIFCO. At the beginning of the season, Juho Mäkelä was scoring pretty freely, actually. I believe he's still tied for second in the league in goals.
But, yeah, he's got five.
Yeah, but they were all, you know, all typical strikers' goals, just poaching in front of the net, rebounds, crosses coming in, which is exactly what HIFCO needed because they're strong defensively, but the goals recently have dried up and they're still only giving up one goal a game, but they're just not scoring any. It's similar to SCCO.
So for HIFCO, they've not found a way to put Pekka Sivola and Juho Mäkelä next to each other. And win a game. So the big theory was that if you had Sivola, who scored, I think he got about 10 or 11 goals last year.
I think 11.
And Mäkelä, who got 16. If you put those two as your kind of strike force, even though they're both, I think, 32, 33, they'd play off each other and work well and win. But I think when they've played together, two things happened. So the first thing is that they started to essentially take each other's space. So they wanted the same ball, the same knockdown, and ended up running into each other a lot. And then secondly, neither one of them works. Okay, hard work is something we're at. So neither one of them tracks back or pitches in or runs a great deal. They're not 90-minute leg players. They're kind of traditional strikers and poachers. Mm-hmm. So it's a really tricky one because if they can find a way for those two blokes to play up front, they'll score goals freely and they'll win games. But I don't think they can do so without, hey, pikkuhukkaja. Yeah.
Who's that that's just joined the Finnish football show?
Hello.
Who's with you, Kike?
Hello.
That's Kimmy.
Hey, Kimmy.
All right, Kimmy. Hey, Kimmy.
Hello.
No,
tell him, get out now.
What,
there's nothing but pain ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go on.
But for HIFCO, I think it's if they can find a way to get Sivola and Mäkelä working with each other up front, they'll be all right. But if they can't, they're in trouble.
Yeah, and I'm right now they're at the bottom of the table by some margin. I believe it's 4 points below all of the other teams. Yeah, and the big problem is goals. If they can get goals, they'll find safety. And I was projecting them to be a mid-table team, but I was banking on them finding those goals. And they just in the last 7, 8, 9 fixtures, they've scored probably 5 goals or so. It's been really, really stagnant offensively for them.
Yeah, it's true, but I think we're like we all sort of understand the general theory. If those two guys can score the goals that they've scored before, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I'm pretty sure in the predictions I had them as like a dark horse for the title, which shows how much I know.
Well, I mean, all of us had Ilves and Kenny for relegation in those predictions, so it shows how much all of us know.
So, yeah, but you can't. Jarkko Visto, I mean, no, sorry. Go ahead.
You were talking about Ilves and like they're doing fantastically well, but how much of that do you think is down to Hylander in goal? You know, like if you got your stats, I don't know if you got your stats there, but how many clean sheets are they making these days? Because is it Mika? Is his name Mika? Mika Hylander?
Yeah, Mika Hylander.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's playing extremely well.
I mean, you know, he got a nod for the national team, didn't he? Made it to the bench of the national team, or
he did. He went to Abu Dhabi in the last round.
Yeah, there we go.
To answer your question, it's four. He's got four clean sheets out of the last four games. There I'm pretty go. Sure. He's phenomenal.
So their quiet climb up the table is in no small part to him. You know.
Well, and also Tendang up top at striker, they haven't scored many goals, but whether it's a penalty or a rebound, he's always the man on the end of those goals. He's got to have 60% of the team's goals this season. Mm. And I mean, that alone is keeping them up in contention for European places right now.
Yeah, the other thing is it's pretty early in the season, and a lot of the first third of the season generally goes to surprises.
Yeah,
the problem with Ilves is and the same with IFK Mariehamn is that they're both incredibly solid defensively, but they don't have that many goals in them. You know what I mean? They're not free scoring and. Eventually, I think so. Jani Lewski is the centre back for IFK Mariehamn. I mean, he's a phenomenal defender. He played, I think, maybe three games for Finland. He spent most of his career playing in Sweden. But as the season gets older, as the season goes on, he's going to find it tougher and tougher because that's what happens. When you get to our age. When you get old. Yeah. But it's just the way it is. And I mean, he's fabulous. And their defense is brilliant. But you've got to keep scoring goals. And I think I can only see Hoyko doing that from now on out. I mean, actually, one point is that with the new stadium and a boost and maybe putting Lossa behind them and all that stuff, Esiko, they've got a game in hand and are, I think, only 10, 11 points off the top.
It's going to happen
for them,
isn't it?
Three games, just... we're a third of the way through the season. There's a hell of a long way to go.
Yeah.
Starting with the game against Hoyko on Saturday at the new stadium. So hopefully, where it all starts.
6-pointer.
Yeah. It's a 6-pointer. It'll make a big difference, I think. And then I think in just 3 weeks' time, we start looking at the first Champions League game. Let's hope it's not the first and only Champions League game.
No. Fingers crossed.
It's going to be something special. So
make plenty of noise, and you'll get them through.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's what we intend to do, and I'm sure that Larry has a few things up his sleeve for Saturday. Mm. But we talked about whether there was going to be a march to the stadium on Saturday. But there are a few other big events going on, including this Karjalaiset Kevätjuhla, a festival celebrating the migration of people from Karelia in the east through the rest of Finland. And there's a big thing going on there at the Arena in Seinäjoki, which is between town centre and the new stadium. So maybe marching down there might not be the best idea. So we'll have to find some way of just making the noise inside the stadium this week.
That's why. That's part of the reason I'm so disappointed with HIFK this year. You know, the last thing I want is for Stadinking it to fall back down and have to travel around the Ukkanen grounds again. You know, it's been fantastic to see the atmosphere that those guys create in Vegas, yeah. Lida, you know?
It's true. Very true. Brilliant fans. Bit crazy, but that's what you need.
Exactly.
They didn't like the late winner that Asiko got against them a few weeks ago, and one or two of them thought they would try and make their way around the pitch and started running round. But not only was there the athletics track, but there was a fence round the outside, and he was running on this grass bank round the outside of the pitch, and then came to a stop when he got to the VIP bar at Keskoskenter and realised he couldn't get any further. But it was kind of, I just had the Benny Hill music playing in my mind as I saw these guys running round the end of the ground.
They certainly put a spectacle.
Yeah, no, they're good noise, support their team well, but that was just unfortunate end to the game.
Yeah.
We've lost Huck. I didn't kick him off. He dropped off. And I reckon that maybe not a bad time to stop. We've been going an hour.
Yep.
So much for keeping a lid on it. We'll still catch some of the first half. Let me just remind everyone listening now on the podcast. Yeah, Harold's saying, Henry, where are you? He's gone, Harold, and we're all going to go now. Hey, maybe we should all just take a moment to thank Harold for being the only person that managed to join us today. So thanks a lot for being there and for asking us a few questions to keep things going along. Just to remind everyone that's listening of all of our sites. So, Mark, you've got FC Suomi, and you had some reports on the recent international games. They're the most recent things I think that you've had on the site there.
Yep.
Rich, Escape to Suomi is on paternity leave, not only from the Finnish Football Show, but also from his own blog, and can be found on Twitter at Escape to Suomi, mostly sharing pictures of him cuddling his baby, Lumi. So good luck. Keep it going, Rich. Hey, Rich, and we want you back. This, it's not a bad substitute, but it's not got quite as much to say for itself. Yeah. I on the Explore Finland radio show, I've got a few repeats going out at the moment, and kind of summer themed repeats, but I'm also trying to get out and record a couple of new things as well. I'm going to be doing a visit to the Oma Asper Stadion in Seinäjoki, and I'm also going to record something about this Kardialaiset Kevätjuhla. So you'll all see that.
Look forward to it.
Soon enough, yeah. Hopefully within the next couple of weeks, those new ones will be up, and maybe there'll be some of the old ones that you've missed, and that'll be interesting. Keke, tell everyone where they can find you online. Where do you want to direct people to?
Okay, so yeah, most of my Finnish football chat comes through on Twitter, so at Keke Mullari, and yeah, you can read my various blog posts at WordPress. If you go to WordPress and search for Keke Mullari, then you can find my old blog posts. There's a couple on there. I need to put something together for my Italy trip. But yeah,
I think you should just transcribe what you said earlier and write that, because that was beautiful.
Yeah. So yeah, you can find me there.
And Henry, people can find you on Twitter at Huck1995.
Yeah, at Huck1995, H-U-C-K. I post, well, now that there's not quite so much, or that the Euros are going on, I'm posting quite a bit about that. But normally it's mostly Finnish football that I post about down there.
And of course, we also, on Facebook, we have the Finnish Football Show Facebook page. It's a closed group, but we kind of let anyone in. All you have to do is ask. So if anyone listening wants to join us, we just share a few stories, have a few chats, occasionally some interesting things come along that people want to talk about, but probably shouldn't. So if you're interested in some of that stuff, then come and find us and ask. We'll let you in. No problem there. The podcast of this will follow in a few days. The next couple of days for me are fairly quiet, so I'll try and get my finger out and get that all edited and uploaded. And you'll also find the video of this on YouTube, the channel for Explore Finland radio show. But it's all goes up in the same place. So finally, Keke, Henry, thanks for joining us. Next time, you may be here again, or it may be Rich. Who knows? We'll wait and see. Mark, co-host, as ever, thanks a lot.
High five.
And that's it.
Well done, guys.
Let's go to the traditional theme music, and we'll say goodbye. Yep.